The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism. Our Dharma talk tonight, our encouragement talk, is going to be given by our Tanto, who is also a senior Dharma teacher of Boundless Way Zen, Alan Richardson.
One of the many wonderful things about this particular spring sesshin here is that we have more than a usual number of new people here. People who are new to sesshin with us here, and people who are new to any kind of Zen retreat. And new people bring a special energy with them that we really savor, I think, when we have a number of them and we feel it. And part of that energy just comes from how steep the learning curve is, all the things you have to pick up in just a very short time, and everything from how to walk into the zendo to how to eat all over again. And it's my privilege to be able to work with new people as Tanto. And last night, two different people came to me with Orioki sets that had not been tied up, which was kind of interesting, because if you've done Orioki practice even once, you would always have your Orioki sets tied up in its placemat, which is also the cloth that you wrap it in, its wrapping cloth. And so I was kind of struck by that, the fact that it happened twice. And so we knotted up the Orioki sets with their two knots. And maybe because of that, this morning when I was looking at the Orioki sets across from me before they'd been unwrapped, I was struck by something that may have been obvious to many of you, but I'd never seen it. And that was that with its double knot and this wrapping cloth, the Orioki set looked weirdly like this icon from my childhood, this iconic image. And this was the image associated with the hobo. And the hobo was a word in the 50s and 60s for a certain kind of wandering homeless person, always male, and iconically, not in real life, always male and carrying his little bundle wrapped up in a big bandana, and then under the two knots, the hobo would classically run a stick under the knots, and then could carry that bundle over his shoulder in this jaunty way that looked like a lot of fun. And this was in cartoons and TV shows and advertising and illustrations. And one Halloween, we dressed up as hobos, and we had our little bandana bundles. And my mom, I remember this well, because my mom used some kind of paste or something to paste coffee grounds on my cheeks so that I would have the three-day beard of the hobo. And my sister had hers, too. And she looked incredibly cute with her coffee grounds. And so there we were, trick-or-treating as hungry, homeless hobos. And you know, it struck me as these connections are just popping in that monkey mind of mine, it struck me that it had never occurred to me all through my childhood, all the times I'd seen this image, how little that was, how few possessions the hobo had if they could fit in that bandana, and what a kind of life that was. And then, of course, it came to me that, yeah, this is the home lever. And this is the classic Buddhist monk in many cultures who just has two things, a robe and a bowl. And sometimes a few little items that go with the bowl that might well be wrapped up in a cloth like ours with those two knots on top. So few possessions. And we lay Buddhists in North America, and we ordained Buddhists who live more or less lay lives, have so many possessions. we're surrounded by them. And how many bandanas would it take to wrap up your possessions? You know, a lot. A whole lot. I remember being really pleased once when I was a much, much younger man that I could get all my possessions after I'd given a lot away into a backpack. But that was princely compared to the hobo's bundle and princely compared to the Buddha's one possession that you see in some statues of the Buddha where he's holding a bowl in his lap. That's his one possession with his robe. So we have so much stuff that, and even, obviously, there are still homeless people in America who have nothing or next to nothing. But people who are close to the poverty line, thanks to Walmart and Target, can have a lot of stuff with a low income. And fortunes were made exploiting this market. People that wanted to live like American super consumers. And so so many of us pile up all this stuff in our super consumer society. And so now it's a minor industry and a kind of cult to declutter. That's the new thing. I'm joining a decluttering group. So, yeah, that's how much stuff we have. We have to declutter it now. And so, you know, that's our American lives. Those of us who are North Americans, I think that's most of us here. And maybe those of us who aren't. And then we come to Sesshin, and for 3 nights and 3 days, we get to unclutter in a big way. And we have our, 3 Oryoki bowls wrapped up in their bandana-like cloth, which in some people's case is a bandana. And maybe we just have one little overnight bag. And we get to live in for 3 days and 3 nights in this spare temple and sit in this zendo with its white walls and its polished wooden floors. And then really try to unclutter all the way. And we're away from our social clutter, which now we have access to every waking moment, thanks to our smartphones and social media. Sometimes I walk from one building to another at Boston College where I teach, and I'll pass 30 or 40 students in a row. Everyone is walking, looking at a phone, like it's some kind of weird zombie condition, but all checking in. And now we don't. We turn off the electronics and all the distractions. We try not even to move, not even to scratch or fidget. And then we deal with the clutter that is our minds. We sit with that. Wow, what a mess. Have you been feeling that? Oh my God, how did all that stuff get in there? How can that all be packed in a 3-pound brain? You know, it's crazy. And we, it can be overwhelming at first. That early Zen experiences can sometimes just be, oh my God, what's in there? And we sit with it. And we sit with it together and we feel that support. And sometimes what happens is we start to realize that it's not quite as thick, not quite as thickly strewn as it looked at first. And there are spaces between all these mental objects. And we can actually make a kind of way through them, through that mental clutter that we call monkey mind. And sometimes we have this sense that all these mental objects are kind of not real. And they get a little transparent. And we take a step. And we discover that we can walk through them. That they are just ghostly. And we don't feel overwhelmed for a while. And it doesn't bother us so much. And at those moments we feel an invitation that our great ancestor Dogen put so well. An invitation to declutter even more. And what he says is, take body and mind and throw them into the house of Buddha. Mm. What an amazing invitation. Because Buddha's house never gets cluttered. He's got the space. And think of that, you know. Take body and mind. Take any sense of ownership of body and any sense of this being your mind. Take any sense that the body is some kind of separate thing and any sense that the mind is somehow individual and idiosyncratic and just yours. Like, how would it have all that crap in it if it was just yours? No. So that's our invitation. Take body and mind and throw them in the house of Buddha. And so that's my encouragement to you and my encouragement to me.